I originally started the chinuch just to find things to do. The guys went crazy. The first year is the yeshiva. I think I started these in like 2004, 2005. And the guys were just bored at night. So I originally started just as a matzav, told the guys to come over. But then, okay, we had to sit around the table and do something. But sort of the emphasis changed.
This was
kind of bad. Yeah. Yeah, I only did it with four guys. I did it every week with four guys. One guy wrote a whole contrast and sent it to me. So, but anyway, so I got a whole lot of material. But so for tonight, it's an honor. We have company. And right tonight, I want to do something I never did before. But I'm sure I did this before, pieces of it. But this I never gave this vibe before. So I'm going to tell you, I don't want anyone to think that I'm the expert on chinuch. I'm not. But you have to be. I made every possible mistake. So Mela, when you make every mistake, then you learn what you did wrong. So on that I could speak proudly. I made a lot of mistakes in my early years. I've been principal since 1994. I'm not principal now. I'm, you know, Shloah Sani Goy, Shloah Sani Oved, Shloah Sani Isha, Shloah Sani principal. I make four brachas a day. Everyone should appreciate, looking back, everyone should appreciate their principal. It's very hard to be principal. Every possible worry you have on your brain, and you get no credit, and everyone always blames you for everything. But a lot of it is your fault, but they still shouldn't blame you so much. And I made a lot of mistakes, and I decided tonight for the very first time to reveal all the mistakes I made. I'm going back to my first time, because I came here in 1994, where Grunblatt hired me to be the assistant principal of a school, of the high school, which had like eight kids in it. And the idea was to be trained to become the principal, become the manal. So after 4 years, I became the manal. After 4 years. So like 2 or 3 years later, I was the manal. Then Grunblatt left, chutzpah. He left, went to New York. And I was deemed like Roy to be. Then I became manal in 1998. He was still here for two more years. Then he left. Like I was deemed like ready to do it without Rabbi Grunblatt there. It's a totally different ball of wax. I made a lot of mistakes. And Rabbi Freudman, Zichron Levracha, was. I asked someone like, "Who's the best consultant out there who could help me?" Someone told me Rabbi Freudman is the best. I didn't have the guts to call him. I spoke to someone else who told me. I said, like, what should I do? I don't know what I'm doing. So he told me I should read a book, The Seven Habits. He told me to read that book, and I learned a lot from that book, but I still didn't know what I was doing. And I called, I didn't call before, I faxed the following letter to Rabbi Foreman. I looked for it tonight, wondering if I found it. It's dated November 24th, 2002. This is more than 20 years ago, right? It's almost 21 years. Okay, 20. So this was, I was principal when I wrote this letter for 3 years and 1 month and 7 days. Okay, here we go. I'm gonna read the letter. It was a fax. I didn't have email back then. So I wrote it. And I'm only reading it with full humility, because everyone, if you don't know what you're doing, instinct is not enough. We must get training. For there are more chairs. Pull over chairs from those rooms, the kitchen. Just pull over chairs if you need. Okay, fine. Okay, very informative. Thanks for the chizuk in your email, in your last email. I think I was ready. I was able to read email. If he told me I got someone to go on to email, but I couldn't email. Please guide me on the following. Okay, Tuesday, Sunday, November, today, Sunday, November 24th. The two best boys in grade 10 cut their once a week Hebrew language class with Dr., I'll leave his name out, a urologist, who I think they resent teaching them Hebrew because A, their gaiva suggests that he knows more than them, even though he cannot learn Gemara as well, Stira. And they're angry at him because he was a little too gaiva dick to them. And they think he is a tzioni and they're kanoim. Normally, cutting a class would result in an after-school detention. These boys went to the Beis Medrash to learn during the class. Implementing the detention will cause a war, and all students would jump a war. A war. And all students would jump on their bandwagon. Of course, I am their Rebbe, and I'm also their principal. My instincts tell me they have to be treated like any other student. Explain it as best as I can and hope for the best. Do you agree? Question number one. Okay. Question number two. I lay out, let's see, four incidents.
These are Rebbe's questions.
Five questions.
These
were my Talmidim. That particular incident was my Talmidim. And I'm writing to Rabbi Foreman to say help.
Why is detention a good idea?
That's a good question. It may have been part of the problem. But you understand, it's 2002, and that's how we did it.
It's
2002. Number two, it's a good question. Good question. And as you know, we don't do detentions anymore, so probably we became smarter. Number two, an 11th grader who has had past temper management issues got upset with his Rebbe and violently threw the Rebbe's paper off his desk. This boy, who had just been suspended for 1 week for organizing a very disgusting thing during science, and it was premeditated since he brought the beans in for breakfast. Okay, you figured out the rest. Okay. Whatever. You figure out the rest. He did something really not nice. As a result, the boy is contemplating leaving yeshiva and going to public school. Although he returned, it's only a couple of weeks later, suspending him again would be a very big clap to him. Normally, a boy who was so publicly out of control to a Rebbe or teacher is told to take a day or two off from school and perhaps seek professional help. My instincts tell me that since this was done so publicly, action must be taken. I shudder as I contemplate the grave consequences this would cause to him and his parents. What do you think? That's question number two. Number three. Okay. We have been vigilant at enforcing dress code issues. One boy, the son of a prominent board member, constantly violates this rule by not tucking in his shirt. The English principal, after numerous warnings, called the parents to ask for support before he would do anything. The mother hung up on him. When the principal subsequently called the father, an ill-advised, just press the right side. When the principal subsequently called the father, an ill-advised call, I admit, the father told the principal to retire since he's over the hill and crabby. Parentheses, he's old, but not over the hill and only a little crabby. That was me, yeah. The principal responded in kind and a war of words ensued.
Oh yeah.
Parents eventually said they'll talk to their son. Do I let the English principal fight this battle with this boy or do I join in? The Rebbeim feel I need to act. The Rosh Yeshiva, I was not Rosh Yeshiva, by the way. I was Rebbe and principal. I was not Rosh Yeshiva then. The Rosh Yeshiva feel that I should do nothing right now to this boy. What do you think?
Yeah,
Nothing.
Casting, have you the rush issues on?
Nothing.
What?
Casting, have you the rush issues on here?
Why is?
Why is he asking Rebbe?
No, I'm asking him. I'm asking him what to do. All these things are my questions. My questions. Okay, number four. Another Mitzuyan 10th grader asked me right before a 12 noon special address by a Chashev Rav this past Sunday if he could leave school. It was an hour before our 1 p.m. Sunday dismissal. He said they were having a family outing. I understood that this meant he was going to a 1 p.m. Dolphin game, which we are very mocked about on early dismissals on Sundays. I told him no. He left anyway. I allowed nature and Bechir to take its course. He returned at 12:30. I whispered a gross Yasha Koach and how impressed I was that he returned, understanding how hard that was for him. However, I moved my seat towards the front to help discipline with grade 9, who were getting a little fidgety. Being behind the green line, the boy was not sitting behind me. The report by Torah Beim is that the boy left at 12:45. Unfortunately, all his friends knew he was going to the Dolphin game and were overwhelmed by the Rebbe discussing when he left. Overheard by Rebbe discussing when he left. And can I pretend I didn't know, since I didn't know until Rebbe told me? Or is this considered so chutzpahdik for him to have left after he received a no? My instincts tell me to pretend I didn't know. I feel I can get away with it. However, I'm concerned that a couple of rabbis will think I'm too chicken to follow through. Parentheses, I am sometimes. The parents will not support disciplinary action. Their son is a Mitzuyan, and the needs of a Yachid have to be considered on occasion. He never misses school. What do you think? Okay, last question. The fact that all four incidents took place on the same day, is that of concern?
Why is the English principal there on Sunday?
Is this normal?
That is number five.
It could be that one happened on different days. Thank you for reading my scribble. I'm trying to set up an email. What do you think?
Who's the rabbi?
Okay, I'm gonna. I have Rabbi Freudman's response, but I would like to. You're reading it. This was 21 years ago. I was a novice principal. I was just trying to figure it out by myself. There was no assistant principal. I'm trying to remember who the rabbi were, but we'll leave the names to protect the guilty. I mean. So, okay, so let's hear what you have to say about it. Okay, here you have the story first about the guys who were chutzpahdik to their grade 10. They cut their Sunday morning. We had a good idea to teach Hebrew for free. There was a doctor in the community who really was an expert on teaching Hebrew. And he offered to teach the 10th grade once a week. We thought the guys would learn Hebrew. It's a half-hour class once a week. And they just hated the class, and they cut. And they hated the teacher because they felt he was a Balgaiva. And also, he's a Tzioni.
Was he a Balgaiva?
Huh?
Was he a Balgaiva?
I could see that.
He wasn't. He was, so they never detained him.
He wasn't a Balgaiva, but he wasn't a teacher. He wasn't a Rebbe, so you have to be... People when you teach, you have to be very humble. And, you know, he came across like, I know the stuff and you don't, so learn from me. It's just not a healthy approach to teaching. So.
I assume everybody's grouping this all together because all of these, like, you have a half a minute to not punish them. But
yes, I want to hear your comments on all of them, so I'm just giving you a reminder. Here you have the cutting the doctor's Hebrew class. Then you have this. You have this Rebbe, this kid who violently threw the Rebbe stuff off the desk.
He threw the Rebbe's stuff was a he.
He had a temper tantrum. He threw the Rebbe's papers off his desk.
Off his desk or the Rebbe's desk?
Off the Rebbe's desk. And nice. This was the same boy who coordinated a bean eating.
I think he's done.
What do you call it? number three, the dress code. The kid with the dress code who refused, absolutely refused to tuck the shirt in. And the mother, it was high school. The mother hung up on him, and the father told him to retire. And then the last one is the kid cut, despite being told not to. After the principal told him he can't leave, he left to go to the Dolphin game. First of all, the Dolphins were always bad, so that's a double cash on the kid.
Was that with his family?
It's not like they went to a Rams game. If they were going there. Okay, so you comment on any one of these stories, and then eventually, this to read the questions was bad, but we hear the answers. We hear his answers, we even.
What?
That's it. Okay. What do you have to say? What are your comments?
Wait, you should have a rule against your family's.
You want to go first? Go ahead.
It's not family.
Your family is going to
the
house.
Actually,
we're not allowed to go to the Dolphin game.
Even if
you're not leaving early on Sunday.
At all.
That was the rule.
For anything.
Why you could ask permission, but we in those days we actually followed through. Like where are you going?
How many kids?
So we had to approve a departure from school. You want to not come to school at all, you could not come to school at all. But you also have to understand, that the yeshiva has a reputation now, but in those days, it was wild, wild west. There was no reputation, there were 8 kids in the school. So in order to create a school, when I came, there were 8 kids in the high school.
When this might have happened, how many kids were there?
This was 6 years later, so maybe there were 40, 50 kids.
All the same
40, 50, out of those 40, 50.
So I'm just saying, but one of the reasons why we had to establish it's a real yeshiva. And I gave you earlier, go to a Dolphin game. So, yeah, we were mockery. I don't think we're even so mockery now. We don't even know when a kid leaves.
It sounds like crazy.
Okay.
It is crazy, but like, it happens.
So, but if he just would have cut and not told me, but he asked me, and I said no. So does it make a difference?
What's that?
I just want to know if what is keeping. No. Are you keeping to your answer even though he is?
The story is that he asked you and then left after. Meaning
right.
It's very different, I think.
Right.
One,
so
one cuts one than the other.
Which one's worse?
If that he asked you.
Right. So what do you say to do?
I'm not sure what to do about it, but I think it's a very.
It's worse. It's worse than just cutting. Right. Of course.
This is a good guy who never left.
He's a good kid.
So. Doesn't the fact that he left after mean that the question was never really a question? He just assumed that he would get a yes, and then from that fact meant like he's like okay, like it's really not such a big deal, and he left anyway.
Right.
It wasn't malicious.
What about after I told him no?
Shani just didn't really.
Nussie says he wasn't expecting a no, so we threw him off. So
what's the sad to ignore it?
You Nussie's saying,
what's
go
the
ahead.
Benefit of ignoring
what's
it?
What's the benefit of ignoring it?
For the school. It just...
You can't fight every child every time.
If you know
it. Every
child. Yeah, make that. Where's the
school?
Who
cares?
It's picking... Who's gonna benefit from ignoring it? Chain reaction?
I have all the answers. I know what happened, and I know all the learning points here. So I'm not going to say a word. I'm going to let you guys argue with each other on it. I don't want to ruin it. You asked some great questions.
Does anyone think that there's any time that anyone in the story would benefit from ignoring it? Yes.
Yes.
Papa school kid.
All his friends knew that he did. And he was probably bragging how he's going to
grab that kid.
Yes.
So what?
Okay, well, let's hear from the expert. So you're getting rid of it. Let's go. Let's hear it. What do you say?
Wait, isn't the English principal one posture? The English principal is broad, but once he did it, now everyone has Baptist.
Why is the English principal
as a professor Baptist? He's wrong. You should have done it.
You don't have to doubt again.
Once you have that rule, that's it.
What is it?
It's at his place.
One second. No, there's a
Dominican.
No one's saying anything about the dress code guy.
Yeah, but the Manalo
feels good. You're talking about the Dominican guy?
I'm scared of the porn. Was Remy scared of porn?
Okay, good. Not getting into it. Oh, okay. Did anyone answer Ezra's question? Is there any benefit to ignoring it?
Yes.
Yeah, so what are you saying?
Tama and Rebbe relationship, if the Rebbe would attack him, like, he felt that.
That's why you should ignore it.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Yeah.
You should ignore all these things for the Rebbe-Tama relationship.
The kids feel it's not fair. The kids don't think feel it's not fair.
You like his answer?
I don't
know.
That's it. Relationship is in
Ezra, go ahead. Ezra, speak.
The relationship with Tama has with Rebbe isn't, let's see how much you're getting away with.
Anybody else have any reasons to ignore the dolphin guy?
The kids feel it's unfair. They think it's unfair that this rule is coming from Gaiva or Yeshiva's not being fair.
Dolphin?
Yeah, even that.
What's the Gaiva?
Are they doing that to every other kid in the Yeshiva?
What's the Gaiva?
They do it to every other kid in the Yeshiva.
Yeah,
are they enforcing this rule?
Yeah.
Are you a Maka?
Because all the other kids in the class know that.
There's one Maisa, Rami Naaman tells over the story. That was, I was Maka Gomer, so, because that was how we told people that we're a yeshiva, not a day school.
Oh, Sunday?
Sunday. I was Maka. You can't leave. I was teaching eighth grade in my first 4 years. And 4 years, I think so. And I walked into class after recess at like 11:25, and half the class was gone. There were 24 kids in the class. There were like 11 kids there. I said, "Where's everyone?" So they went to the Dolphin game. I said, "What do you mean, chutzpah? They only asked for shus. We asked for shus from who?" Rabbi Grumblatt. I said, "No way." I left the classroom. Went to the office. Rabbi Grumblatt, did you give a shus to 13 kids to leave to go to the Dolphin game? So he opens up his book. Yeah, 13. So I said, "How could we let 13 kids leave to go to the Dolphin game?" He said, "You know, it's Sunday." You know, and they had been there 10 years. They never did it. It was like my first year. I said, "So we can't." No, it wasn't the story. I said, "We can't do that." I called a whole Hanhol meeting, the three Rashibis, right, Jake, right, Narman, right, Gumlat, and we started a new Mahalach. You cannot leave early on Sundays. They said, you're right. That's why we brought you in, fresh blood. You know, we're having a different yeshiva now. We can be Machbid, we can be a real yeshiva, and not leaving early on Sundays. So this is like a couple of years later. So we were Machbid. The answer to your question, we were being Machbid. I wasn't just picking on that kid. Nowadays, that was probably what it looked like. It can't monitor 150 kids, you know, leaving on a Sunday for a minute. It could be it'll just go under the radar. But back then, establishing the tour of yeshiva. Okay, so yeah, what do you say? Temper management guy, the guy.
He's out.
He's out. What?
He's out of the yeshiva for a week.
One fraction.
Branches losing your temper in public.
If I could just offer some resistance on that, just devil's advocate, on that case, I could be Malamed Schus that he has a temper. Everyone knows that.
Do therapy. I don't care.
So therapy.
I don't know. Yeshiva should do something for him. You shouldn't just leave him. That's what we do. You're going to get your way. Okay, Yeshiva.
Okay.
All he did was
get a piece of paper.
What? Yeah.
Knocked
off some papers.
Get out.
Let's say he would curse out. Let's say he would curse out the Rebbe. It's even less. What's the difference?
More acceptable.
How
it's acceptable.
You ready?
Yeah.
You're green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't have the results. He said, "Oh, that's not a
Shot. Oh, you're next. You're next. Yeah.
What help would it be to punch the kid? Since it's a one-time thing, he probably feels really bad about it. Like 20% he probably felt bad about it. He'll be upset for the next 2 hours.
There's always a savage.
I don't remember what he did to that kid, but my instincts are to agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with anyone else, but I hear that sad that this one is the most. You could be the most lenient on because everyone knows the kid's crazy. Right? You don't go do that. So if a guy has a temper, he has a temper. He just kicks the rubby's desk and storms out and slams the door. He's not doing it consciously. He can't control himself. So everyone knows he needs a doctor. So maybe. So I promise you next. Yeah. You can go after him. Hold on, get in. Guys, we're at the clock. We have 15 minutes. I promise right Wednesday. Yeah.
Wouldn't it possibly be best to try to find a different kind of way to discipline him? Instead of disciplining him with a suspension, which would not make him not want to come back, say, like a detention, or a couple of detentions even, or like a long speech from a Rebbe in private. It's like just something that's obviously we're getting on top of you so much as you can be dealt with.
Yeah, for sure. So those are always fantastic insights. Have to come up with the right approach. Now probably that's what I would do.
Usually
it's
like a 3 hour
suspension.
Sure. Not much. Is there an assignment during it? Do you get an assignment during suspension?
I think the only time the current Manalan, which I probably have a lot to do with, suspend now, there's virtually no suspension in the school. Virtually no, yeah. Theoretically, if a guy takes a haircut that can't be fixed up, they would tell the guy, not out suspending him, just you gotta wait till your hair grows in and you can't walk around like that. That would be one situation. And then if a guy did something almost illegal, like really some really serious things that are really considered dangerous for his friends, that would be not a suspension, but more like, well, we gotta take a break, speak to a psychologist will let us know that you're safe.
But would he get an assignment or just be
don't isn't the
point? Also, I heard that if you're really suspending, the effect of a suspension more than a day or two is zero.
Did the kid do it out of mouth or he just did it out of anger?
We virtually have, from this is the beginning. I worked with Rabbi Feuerman for 15 years, but the effects of that are still in the school. There are virtually no detentions and no suspensions. Sending a kid out of school sometimes happens because the kid can't be in school. It's not a suspension. It's not even called a suspension. It's called like you can't be in school right now. I don't know, whatever.
Did the kid just bedak malchah or you just did it because you?
Which kid? Which story?
The paper story.
Yeah,
the paper story.
He lost his temper. I don't know. He probably got a test back. He didn't like the mark.
Okay, fine. It's not bedak malchah.
Okay, fine.
I wasn't
trying
to suspension to begin with. Like, unless, I feel like only punishment is suspension is that like your parents care and then it's like awkward. Well,
right.
If they don't care, so it's not even like a punishment.
It's sending a message.
Yeah, it's like. I had a situation around this time where a boy was walking down the hall, and the computer teacher, who was like the librarian, told the kid in the hall to tuck his shirt in, and the kid said, "You're not my teacher." So this teacher reported it to the English principal, the same one who was too old, not with it, over the hill, and crabby. So he was just, not over the hill, a little old, and a little crabby. And he told this the principal found out about it. He went over to the kid and suspended him.
What?
Okay, go home. You'll respond to the teacher when he tells you something, and you can't be in school.
It's too old school.
Goodbye. So I know he was old school. It was 20 years ago, and he was 80. So it was like 100 years ago. So he sent the kid home. So the parent of that kid was a prominent parent. When I found out about it, so first of all, I was not happy that it was the first year he was principal. And I was not happy. I was young. It was like the second year of Manal. I was 40 years younger than him. So it was a little weird, a little awkward. He respected me very much. I hired him. But I never told him you can't suspend anyone. I told him, I thought it should be obvious. But it was to come. I told Liz, don't suspend someone that's mean to me. He put me in a bad situation, but I had to back him up. But so the parent stormed in, was in the school like 30 minutes later, storming into my office, and they came into my office. I said, first of all, before they said a word, first of all, it took you 30 minutes. I think you'd be like 20 minutes ago. That's the first thing. They smiled. They smiled. And I said, okay, before you say anything, no, I don't think he should have been suspended. I apologize. It happened. What am I supposed to do? Fire the English principal?
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying what I told
you're
the
parents. You're not there.
I'm just telling what I told the parents. Rhetorical question.
I don't care. That's the Yeshiva's job.
I said, the principal was trying to back his teacher, and that's what he did.
Yeah.
I said, don't worry. I'll tell you what I will do. I will expunge the incident from his file. It didn't exist. Let's just let the principal have a day off, because it will not go anywhere. I give him my word. I said, just relax. I said, you can speak to your son. You should speak nicely to teachers. We want to learn that lesson, don't we? So he said, yeah, okay, yeah. I said, fine. Then they thanked me. They're walking out. And I said, and the parent turns around and said, all right, Papa. I told myself when I came in, I'm not going to let you calm me down. And I'm going to yell at you, and you did it to me. They left calm. Sometimes when you grant, I know there's an old school, unless he said something about old school, you're right about that. There's a certain old school that, like, some people would say I threw the English principal under the bus. I don't think I did. I told the person that he was, understand what the English principal was doing. He was trying to defend the honor of his teacher, otherwise he loses the teacher. I said, so think about it. If I undo it, that I lose my English principal. Are you going to be the English principal tomorrow? Am I going to be the English principal tomorrow?
Why did you put
so
that out?
I said,
care.
Okay, it was a mistake. I think it was a mistake, but I'm not going to tell him that. I have bigger battles to fight. I said, you know, your son spoke disrespectfully to the teacher. That's the point I should have made. It should have just made as a phone call to you that, you know, he spoke that way. Please talk to him. He shouldn't speak that way to a teacher. And that's all it needed sometimes. So sometimes by just like, you know, sort of validating the complaint. I don't think it's so bad. I know there are many principals who would disagree with me on this and feel that you're not defending the teacher. If I made a mistake and someone said, yeah, I don't agree with that, I wouldn't have done that way, would I be so upset? They're entitled to their opinion. That's how I did it. So, okay. I guess I would love it if they fully supported me. I guess I would like that, but that's how I handled it. Okay, but you're right. This is suspensions sometimes are like they're spread around.
Would Rebbe agree with the principal? What do you have? I mean, let's say the principal actually had a valid reason. Would Rebbe have still just backed down just the parent when we come
No,
out?
I don't think I would lie and say I agree with something I disagreed with. I don't think I would do that. I could say I hear where you're coming from. You make some valid points, and you know, if we had to do it over again, maybe we should have thought of those what we did. And I would just try and find some area. Sometimes you can just by validating. I hear what you're saying. You know that. You make some valid points. Okay, let me think about it. I'll call you. Let me call you later. I want to think about it. And
what,
you know?
Why, from a chinuch standpoint, does that make any sense to do that to the kid? I mean, in his brain, he is being as well for some reason.
I mean,
just because
his parents,
he did something really unconscionable. He told me he's not my teacher. No, all I said is that I didn't say it's not right. I don't think there's any point in suspension. That's why I agree with them. But you know,
is it right for suspension?
I mean, nothing's right for suspension. So therefore, you know, parent. If I was my kid, I would have. When the kid came out, I would slap them across the face. You know, like I never smacked my kids across the face. But like, what kind of chutzpah are you talking? The teacher asked you to tuck your shirt in. You told me not my teacher. What do you think you are? Yeah, of course, it was right for suspension. If you're suspending, yeah. I mean, what would your parents do? What would your parents do? They'd kill you. If they heard that you said that to your teacher, like, yeah, you're not my teacher? Like, what do you mean you're not my teacher? He's a teacher in the school. And I know what my parents would do. I could feel it right now. You spoke that way to a teacher? Oh, my gosh. I'd get killed.
Yeah.
You don't speak that way to a teacher.
Said Pedro was right.
Huh?
Except that there's no suspensions.
Except that the suspension is almost like a... you did that to me, they're going to do this to you. It's almost like
it's
a...
It's not really, like, right now, no. You think of, like, an English teacher telling
you... But it's not coming from the teacher, though. So it doesn't have the message for you.
Yeah, I mean, there are ways to teach that lesson without suspending. The parent was just nervous he's not going to get into law school. That's what the parent was coming from. He wanted to go into law school. No, he didn't. He didn't apply to law school, but he did apply to medical school.
Did he get in?
He got in. Yeah, he was a 4.0.
Was his last name?
Huh? Jacob. So, okay. Yeah, no, it was a good kid. Like, okay, so any other more comments? If we have 6 minutes for the answers.
Does it ever work to just, like, talk to the kid? Or just say, like, that's really not okay?
Yeah.
Okay, it's like, listen to that.
If the temper tantrum kid, if let's say the right course of action would be to tell him that he needs to get actual help, what would be the best way to do that without him becoming defensive and, like, angry at that? Just a suggestion of that.
So in that particular situation, you could ask for a meeting with the kid and the parents. So it wasn't the first time it happened, the second time. So it's not okay. It's not healthy. It would be healthy for you. You're already, almost graduated high school, you know, first week in ninth grade. Now you're almost graduating high school. You're going to have to get married. You know, you want to be dealing with this issue. It's not okay. That's a really bizarre. That's like really way bar. I mean, for a third grader, a fourth grader, yeah, these kids lose their temper all the time. You know, they can't. Third grader, second grader, third grader. You know, you want to be a sixth grader, seventh grader. You want to be able to react so that they know they crossed the line. Already kid in high school, 10th grader, acting that way.
Aren't the kids in like third and fourth grade more like scared of teachers?
That's why high school kids, there are no fights. There are no fights. The kids you fight. The argument I tell two kids get into a fight, I said, okay, you think I always agree with, you know, Rabbi Kier? We're teaching 12th grade. We have different things we have to do. Should we go here, now, there? So let's say we disagree. So we disagree. Let's say you saw Akira and I in a fight.
That's great.
I would think it's ridiculous. It's like bizarre. What's wrong with that?
But Winter says there's nothing more entertaining than two grown adults fisting.
So Mimela, I tell them, I view it the same way. Once you get past 14 years old and you get into a fight, I look like so weird. You don't view it that way because you think you're a little kid, but you're not a little kid. So, like, you get into a fight with someone over what? It's usually nothing good. So, no, you can't get into a fight anymore. You have that conversation with them. They have to see themselves how you're seeing them. So, I usually say that. I pick another rabbi to get into a fight with them. They say, I don't matter with him. I start fighting with him. I hit him, he hits me. It'd be ridiculous. Like, we're just like, yeah, there's nothing more entertaining. Okay, so we're going to have one more, Rod, because we have 2 more minutes. I'm not going to read you his answer now, because I don't want to, like... I just want to give you over one...
Calm very quickly.
Well, I'll give you one...
It takes me 5 seconds.
What? It's too good. I'm gonna better give you.
Oh, we have another round tomorrow night.
I'll be doing
it. Yeah. No, we're thinking Wednesday. We're just having parts tomorrow night.
No.
Okay.
Saying after Seder?
Yeah.
The barbecue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Dear Rabbi Mordechai, regretfully, I couldn't respond to him because this week has been enormously pressured. Your last fax, which you aptly called a scribble, it was handwritten, was difficult to read, but I did get through it. It deserves a phone call, and by the way, I did not know Rabbi Foreman. I met him once, but this is like basically cold call, cold fax, cold response. Very cold. It deserves a phone call, and so if you'd like to suggest a late evening this week, when you'd like to talk, we can try to arrange it. You get a great deal of credit for asking whether the fact that all 4 incidents took place on the same day is a matter of concern. Your intuition tells you that it is, and that's why you ask. I join your intuition. Although the actions of your Talmidim, the parents, are inexcusably rude and rebellious, they are some sort of distorted response to a repressive environment which seems to have generated in the yeshiva. Somehow, unwittingly and unintentionally, your Rebbeim have managed to engender an overly pressured culture to which your Talmidim and their parents have built up deep and powerful resentments. Your yeshiva is not a happy place to be, and learning in it is not a joy. The environment appears to have somehow become, surprisingly for a Chafetz Chaim yeshiva, not nice. This is bound to be reflected eventually in dwindling enrollment and faltering community financial support. In other words, the picture I get, and perhaps erroneously, is not a pretty one. It is a challenge of enormous proportions and one which requires a complete change of perspective and rethinking of everything the yeshiva is in the habit of thinking and doing. One of the major things the yeshiva needs to start doing is listening deeply and emphatically to its Talmidim and parents. Not an easy assignment. That at the same time, it is a great opportunity. The accreditation process of asking the four questions concerning every aspect of the yeshiva's academic and social life of which we spoke is a good place to get started if you haven't already done so. I hope this email isn't excessively hard-hitting, ouch, and therefore counterproductive. I dare to say it because I sense that you already know it to be true. That was.
Good. Let me still call them better that way.
This was the only thing that calmed me. If he was everything's great, I was like, oh, now I don't know what to do. They told me everything's terrible. That was the best thing he could have told me. But we'll just close with these for the four questions. Every time you have a problem, you can do this for life. Any question, any time you have a problem, these are the four questions you need to do. What is the ideal? Okay, let's say, I'm trying to pick something. Okay, you're trying to solve the yeshiva's menus. Okay, let's pick that just off the top of my head. Okay, it's pretty generic. It's just food. Okay, so what is the ideal? 7-course meals, unlimited budgets, steak, whatever. I don't. What is the ideal? Number one. The first question is always, what is the ideal? Okay. Second question is, what do we got? No course meals. Bread and salt. Okay. What are we currently doing? Question three. What are we currently doing to get from what we got to the ideal? Again, what are we currently doing to get from what we got to the ideal? And the fourth question where you should be spending most of your time is, what more can we do to get from what we got to where we got to go? Four questions. Problem solving. If you ever need to do any problem solving, these four questions will deal with all of them. It's for every single problem you can think of. What's the ideal? What do we got? That's just establishing what do you want to get to, and what do we got? Number three, what are we currently doing to get from what we got to where we got to go?
What does that mean? Like, what effort are you putting into?
Yeah, what are you doing currently? The minion attendance, let's say, is 10%. Okay? Out of, 10%. And you want to be at 98%. So what are you currently doing? Yeah, we have like an old guy knocking on the door 20 minutes in. Okay, that's what we're doing currently. He's not really doing such a good job, but that's what we're doing. Okay? And what we got to do? Yeah, get an ambassador in every room to wake everyone up. Yeah, it'd be amazing. You know? Or don't end the vadim at 2 in the morning because no one's going to get up for chakras. You come up with a lot of things. What more can we do? So it's a great way to solve all the problems. And Beis Hashem, next time, we'll go through, after this letter, the first lesson. So I haven't looked at any of these things in many years, and I went through my files tonight, and I found the first tidbits of change that we did. So it'd be very nice to you do like the anatomy of a total school makeover. And what we were doing was, Rabbuma was doing the same thing, was worse. We would give it, the guy came late to Shacharis and was talking, he had like a 200 word assignment. It was actually, you know, old school, that was like primitive. But when Rabbuma is such a tzaddik, when he did it, no one yelled at him. When I did it, they killed me. So I was just continuing what he was doing, but it wasn't working. And Rabbi Grunba told me recently, I was joking with him, and he said he thinks had he continued doing it, it wouldn't have worked. The school got bigger, it wouldn't have worked then either.
How quick did it take to see a turnaround in everything?
By September, it was a totally different school. Even by February, it was very different. Because this was early in the year. This was like November, like right after Sukkot.
Less than a year.
But by February, it was already we did a lot of things. Beis Hashem, next time we'll talk about it. Okay, so thank you so much.